This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
With me, Dr. Dinothra Archer-Cartwright. I want to thank you all for joining me on this Tuesday night for another exciting episode, All Things Health, Wellness, and Things That Pertain to the Bahamian Society. I want to thank you, of course, for bringing us here, Medical Concierge Services. That is our medical health clinic. So for the entire family, women, children, men, older persons, we will see everybody, basically. And so we will take care of all your primary care needs. So if you want to reach out to us, 326-1521 or our WhatsApp, 432-4010. We're also on Instagram and Facebook, Medical Concierge Services. And on Instagram, that's medical_concierge_services. All right. We are right now, we're on Guardian Radio 96.9, and you can also tune into the show every Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. on our Facebook page, so you want to go and like that. It's the Doctor is In with me, Dr. D. Archer. And of course, I'm a family medicine specialist, and so I like to talk all things health and wellness, but I also like to talk about societal topics because these things are all integrated. And health really relates to all aspects of things. And so my topic tonight is a little bit more social, and I'm going to be much more liberal tonight with the phone lines and open them up fairly early. So if you want to chime in, if you have something you want to say on this topic, or if you have something that you've been waiting to ask for a while, and sometimes I haven't opened the line in time, you can pose those questions there. So I'll take some health questions if I have to tonight as well. But this is really a social topic because I've been looking at the direction of the country. I've been looking at how things are in the Bahamas right now. And I tend to be quite concerned. So, and you see a lot when you're a doctor because you get to see people from all walks of life, especially in my business. I do have a very polarizing different sides as well as the entire spectrum of the population from expats, tourists, to Bahamians, middle class, upper class, all gamut of people. And so it really gives me a really good perspective on how things are and how things are doing. And some people are doing quite fine, and the economy seems to be picking up quite well. We're doing really well with tourism. But we've lost a lot of our middle class, and we seem to be having some great social ills plaguing the country, crime, education, health, all of those areas are just struggling so much. And it really pains me because these are really the building blocks of any nation. You have to have a healthy nation to be productive. You need an educated nation so that you can make good, wise decisions and move in certain directions. You want to have a good economy as well. And you want an educated enough populace so that they can do things with their money even when they get it. And we seem to be having some issues. I think we were kind of like 98 or 97% literacy. And I think in 1920, we actually started seeing a slip in our literacy rate, which means our ability of our young people to read and comprehend and all that kind of stuff. So we need to really take a look at what's happening, what's going on. And so I really wanted to do this topic to look at what it really takes to be successful. What does it really take to make it? And I think on another layer of that is, what does it take in the Bahamas to make it? Because I've always said we have this kind of imaginary glass ceiling. And, you know, it's very hard to smash that if you aren't, I guess, like politically connected and a lot of different things. So it's really hard to do. It's just a hardworking person. So I wanted to tackle some of the key things that broadly create success in people from studies and what we've seen in the United States, and kind of discuss what does that mean here in the Bahamas and how we as Bahamians can take that and use that to the best of our ability on our individual level. And hopefully that will impact the entire community. So I usually talk to most of the young people that come in the kids and stuff like that. Well, I started in pediatrics. And so I'm always very deeply vested in the kids and the children. I have two children of my own, so I understand how important it is for children to kind of find their path and find their way. And I'm really concerned about their level of education. So a young man was in my office one day, and well, I tend to ask this question to all young people when they come in, especially students, young adults, and teenagers, really, because nobody really asks teenagers what they really want to do. So I tend to ask young people, like, what do you want to do? What do you want to be, right? Because that is really the platform for a lot of the decisions that they make. And so lots of times they give me really great things. They want to be a doctor, a lawyer, an accountant, a pilot, all of these things. So then I ask them, so how are you going to do that? And they all kind of look at me with a blank stare, you know, like, what do you mean? How am I going to do that? And if they're in school, I'll say, like, what is your GPA? And so a lot of them will tell me, well, my GPA is a 1, my GPA is a 2. And then you got a couple who say, you know, my GPA is anything above that. But, you know, you get a lot of those who have a lower GPA. But they have something that they really want to do that's amazing, which is a good thing. The problem is, how do we direct these kids to realize that the things that they do now are going to be impactful for their life in the future? And so I would go on, because this is a part of their development. So their stages of development as they become young adults, teenagers, young adults, they have to start focusing on the future. And I find that a lot of our young people are not focused on what it takes, and they've never been challenged on what it takes to create the type of future that they want. And so if your GPA is 1, but you want to be, let's say, a doctor, a lawyer, an accountant, it's going to be extremely challenging, because first of all of those professions require some form of a degree or something. So you have to get into college or whatever like that. Well, what are the requirements for college? You have to have a certain GPA. If you're going to school here in the Bahamas, in like a university here, you have to have certain BJCs, all of these things. And these kids are so unprepared for this. They are so unprepared. And I have to wonder, what conversations are we having with our kids? What conversations are happening in the schools? What conversations do we need to be for people to understand that they need to have a plan? And I'm going to get into that a little bit later about some of the key steps for success. But it's important to start from the very beginning. And I wanted to look at poverty in the Bahamas, because we do have a section of the population that is in what we call abject poverty, right? So from the research that I looked at, they said about $8 per day is kind of like the borderline of what you need to sustain yourself. Now, everybody knows that $8 a day in the Bahamas is really, really difficult place to be. So I think it's really hard to imagine where the poverty line is, because, you know, a lot of things are subjective and depends on how you're living and who you're living with and all this stuff. But there are people who are living in abject poverty. We also have the working poor, where you have a job, but you basically either behind all the time in your bills, or you're just living paycheck to paycheck. And I find that that's where a lot of our people are, just kind of living paycheck to paycheck. So I wanted to look at poverty in the Bahamas. So I saw a really great article in The Guardian, of course, I think it was actually Philip Glanis here who wrote this, but he talks about poverty. He quoted a quote from Mahatma Gandhi, which said, poverty is the worst form of violence. And so this is a part of his kind of two-part series that he wrote. And he wanted to consider defining poverty in the Bahamas and what that was. And he defined poverty as the chronic lack of basic human needs, including adequate nutrition, food, clothing, housing, clean water, and health services. And poverty in the Bahamas resulted from multiple factors, including poor resource management, inflation, which we've been having a lot of, which is actually driving some people into poverty, inadequate education, lack of employment opportunities, environmental degradation, inadequate and insufficient incentives. So incentives to thrive or to do well. So we discussed he discussed these factors, and he kind of looked at this idea of this minimum amount, like I talked about $7.84 in terms of per day that's needed. And he really estimated that it was 9.3% of Bahamians and 5% of households were kind of like below the poverty line, abject poverty. The article goes on to talk about what it requires just food-wise for someone to survive. And he had a minimum of $3.82 per day, which worked out to about $13.94 per person a year. All these numbers substantially know. And, you know, this article, I think, you know, although this says early this year, I think these numbers are pretty conservative for living in the Bahamas. All right. And so he also looked at the cost of total poverty line in 2013, which included allowances for purchases of non-food accessories, and it came in around $11.64 per day, which translated into $4,247 per person. And so, you know, this is like abject poverty, which we see in small pockets in the Bahamas, but we don't really see it in like a florid state. But he talks about identifying the poor and in using that as ways to gather information in depth about poverty, and then measurements of poverty over time and what that really means. So the incidence of poverty at the national level in 2013 was about 12.5%. In other words, 1 in 8 residents were living in poverty in 2013. And at a regional level, the Family Islands had the highest poverty levels of 17.2%. Its population had a level of per capita consumption that was lower than the total poverty line. In New Providence, that poverty rate was also the same at 12.4% as the national rate was. In Grand Bahama, the incidence of poverty was lower than the other two regions at 9.4%. Even though a poverty rate is higher in the Family Islands than in the other two regions, the majority of the poor, 71.5%, are actually found in New Providence. And so that's a mixture of different things there. All right. And so when he looked at young people, people younger than the age of 20 were overrepresented amongst the poor, while their population share was 33.7%, almost half of the poor belonged to this age group. 49.7% of the poor were between those ages, younger than the age of 20. So it's really the children that are suffering. More specifically, there were only two age gap groups with poverty rates that were higher than the national rate. That was children 0 to 9 and those 10 to 19. For 20 to 29 year olds, year old group was one with a poverty rate of about 13%, most similar to the national rate, which the remaining groups underrepresented the poor population. So 60 to 69 year old group was the age with the lowest poverty rate of only 6.5%. They also looked at reports published in 2017 by United Nations, which stated that 14.8% of Bahamian population lived below the poverty line compared to the 2013 survey, which placed it at 12.5%. So from 2013 to 2017, we had an increase in the poor in the Bahamas. So what's emerging from poverty? One of the most critical imperatives of any government, he said, is to provide a safety net for those who subsist below the poverty line. Successive governments have implemented programs targeting this objective, but we seem not to be really hitting home with this. The extent to which our citizens and residents just cannot manage to escape the intransigent clutches of this insidious phenomenon speaks to the urgency which we must redouble our efforts. So he concluded, Mr. Galanis, that we need to really understand what's causing this condition, and we need to understand poverty in itself. And it's important for us to realize that it's not just the poor man's problem, because a lot of things spin off of poverty in our society, and that the problem really impacts all of us. And we must look at it a lot more closer. So I think he has another part of this series. I didn't really see that, but I wanted to point that out because that is a thing. Before we really kind of dive into some of the points that I really think are important, there was another article or blog that I saw by the Borgian Project, which looked at childhood poverty in the Bahamas. And what they found was quite similar. They found about 12.5% living with under $5,000 a year. And many of those households were basically supporting children. So that's not a lot of money. Additionally, children under the age of 14 represent the group in the highest level of poverty, with access to resources and basic needs. Without those things, children are likely to have very troubling maturity. So these are the kids that are going to get in a lot of trouble. So the lack of food, sleep, time for developing child who is affected by poverty, and that could affect their performance in academics, recreation, as well as social interactions and other aspects of their life. So what are the blocks that they found in education? As Bahamas has grown its economy and infrastructure, its educational system has also grown to match, of course. However, there has been alarming disparity in the quality and access to education. The literacy rate, which I discussed earlier, of people over the age of 15, decreased from 98% in 1995 to 93% in 2020. Many have largely attributed this trend to the differences in the quality of education between private and public schools. I know they're making a lot of efforts to improve the public school system, but these are the facts. It's up to about 2020. So it'd be great to know what those numbers are today in 2023. But there was obviously a decline in our educational system. The graduation rate at that time was 44% for boys and 51% for girls, while the graduation rate for private school institutions was 87.6%. So quite a difference. And that's what the authors of this article were basically showing, that there's a problem there. The reason for the variance is a lack of funding, resources, teaching materials, school supplies, internet access, and public schools. Home situation. So, this is going to tie into some of the important recommendations on what it would take to rise up out of poverty and lower income status in the world and also in the Bahamas. And some of you might find this a little controversial, but we'll get there. So home situation, this is the same report. So it looked at the fact that the Bahamas has a really low level of dual household dynamics. In other words, mother and father married in the home. So more than 50% of children in the Bahamas are born out of wedlock by single parents who often raise them. And I think the number is as high as about 75 or 80%, if I'm not mistaken. So this is kind of lowballing it. We have a really large population of children brought up by single mothers in this country. And it doesn't all have to be bad. I was brought up by a single mother. She, however, was later in her life, and she was college educated, which I think makes a little bit of a difference when we look at the outcomes, and we'll talk about it later. And don't get upset with me about that, but that's going to play a role, I have to say, in a little bit. Keep that in mind. All right? So household, this holdover from times when large families lived together, so very different from our history where we had large families that lived together, they cohabitated, they took care of the children. So even if the parents weren't around, you had grandparents and, you know, aunts and uncles that were all a part of the family home. That's not a dynamic that we have now. So and children do not feel the absence of the parents so harshly if you have that, you know, family dynamic. However, the commonality of this has faded. And so we really have lost a lot of that in our culture, where people kind of move out from their parents and, you know, they're living these separate lives. And so if they're working, where are the kids, all of these things, according to the Bergeron Report, play a role in poverty, especially in children and young adults. So children in that single parent home that's being raised also suffer a lot more proportionately from poverty, having more developmental and material disadvantages in life, and the educational challenges and the dropout rate among these children is really reflected in our Bahamian society. So they look to the future. They look to NGOs helping in this capacity and kind of this post-COVID world of bringing awareness to this particular situation and some of the projects that they looked at. And so this kind of brings me to what we call the three simple rules to kind of get yourself out of poverty. And then we'll focus more on what that means in order to turn that into success. And so three simple rules poor teens should follow to join the middle class. So we have a large erosion of the middle class. We have a lot of kids not staying in school, dropping out of school. And we have a lot of single parent homes. And this will build the case for the simple rules or the sequence of success. And this is something that you may think is very conservative, but the data all points to the three simple things being the starting block of rising yourself out of poverty and making your way towards a successful life. So this is coming from the Brookings Institute. And this particular op-ed was written by Ron Haskins. And this is from 2013, but I've seen this in many different versions throughout my time. And it really stuck with me. I was watching a show and these three simple rules came up and I thought, wow, this is fascinating and this is a concept, but it's a concept that makes a lot of common sense. So the article starts talking about the policy aimed at promoting economic opportunity for poor children must be framed within three stark realities. First, many poor children come from families that do not give them the kind of support that middle-class children get from their families. Second, as a result of these, children enter kindergarten far behind the more advantaged pairs and on average never catch up and even fall further behind. Third, in addition to the educational deficit, poor children are more likely to make bad decisions that lead them to drop out of school, become teen parents, join gangs, and break the law. In addition to the thousands of local national prisons we have in every country, people avoid these life-altering problems. So we've always avoided the difficulty of the conversations like this. And so we need to look at and figure out ways of convincing young people that their decisions will greatly influence whether they avoid poverty or they enter the middle class. So politicians, school teachers, administrators, community leaders, ministers, parents, all need to be drilling the same message in a free society. As they enter adulthood, there are three major responsibilities. These three things are the key building blocks to coming out of poverty, all right, for children. So one, at least finish high school. You gotta finish high school. I just talked about that almost half of our children, more than half of the kids in our public school system are not finishing high school. They're not graduating. So they have already kind of missed out on the first kind of pillar of this construct towards success. Number two, get a full-time job. And number three, wait until the age of 21 to get married and have children. Those three things, although they may sound very conservative, and they seem to be almost against what we see happening right now, which makes sense, right? Those three simple things can elevate a person out of poverty. So there, and most of this research is done in America, showed that adults who follow these three simple rules, only 2% are in poverty, and nearly 75% have joined the middle class. And that means that they are earning over $55,000 or more per year. There are surely influences other than these principles that play a role, but following them guides a young adult away from poverty and towards the middle class. So yes, there are a lot of other things that play a factor into this. But simply, those three conditions can really change the direction of a young person's life. Consider an example that they present. In America, more than 40% of American children, including more than 70% Black children and 50% of Hispanic children, are born outside of marriage. This unprecedented rate of non-marital births, combined with the nation's high divorce rate, means that about half of the children will spend part of their childhood, or a considerable number of these of their childhood, in a single parent family. As hard as single parents try to give their children a healthy home environment, children in female-headed families are four times as likely as children from married couple families to live in poverty, right? So there are anomalies to this. There are things outside of the framework of this. Like I said, I'm from a single mother home, so it's not impossible, but it is difficult. And depending on whether you fulfill the other conditions, that's quite alarming. Now, these are U.S. statistics, reflect a lot on what's happening in the United States. And so four times more likely, right, to live in poverty. In turn, poverty is associated with a wide range of negative outcomes in children, including dropping out of school and continuing the cycle of having children out of wedlock in a sense. And I think, you know, it's almost come the norm in our society to not be married and having children. And I'm not condemning anybody for, you know, things that have happened or decisions that they've had to make. But we do have to take a really deep look at what this means for our society. And is this the direction that we want to continue to go into? And what environments are required for children and adults to flourish. Like America, we've turned quite away from this culture of marriage. And because, you know, we have gotten so progressive, I guess, in a sense. But there are positives to having a two-family home. And we do also have in marriages a really, really high divorce rate. So there's something that's just going on. And we're seeing a reflection of this in our society in different ways. Okay, so, but they kind of looked at it also and discovered that college-educated women have a high marriage rates, low non-marital births, and low divorce rates. The marriage culture seems to be alive and well for those who have a college degree. So that's something right there. So those people, those women that got a college degree tend to have gotten married and stayed married. So there may be something there that we talked about in terms of education that we need to look at. These families usually not only have enough money to afford good schools for their children, but also provide a stable family environment that allows children to flourish. So the article kind of looks at those things and talks about what it is to create a more stable society for children and how do we do that. So very, very important key steps in just rising out of poverty, those simple things, if you speak them to your children and we all as a community convince them that, hey, you need to get a high school education. It's important. And it goes into the steps that we're going to talk about in terms of the success later in life and how do we move to a different level. And so we need public campaigns that show the value of stable relationships, children, and society. And we need these critical messages to go to our young people if we want to avoid unwanted teen pregnancies and to kind of have a plan for their life. And so we need to look at those things. And that requires not only a cultural shift, a shift in ideology. It may take years to do, but what are we doing as we plan this behemoth society if we aren't encouraging a social construct that is going to produce a positive future outcomes for us all? And so we're going to take a quick break and we're going to talk about how to be successful in life, 10 keys to that, and how do we build on the foundation of those three simple keys that we talked about. So we're going to take a quick break on the doctor's end and we'll be right back.
On the go? Miss the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Guardian Radio app is here. Listen live to all our Guardian Radio shows and live video stream select programs in our studio. Get information about Guardian Radio shows and our hosts. Send messages, including text, email, and even call. All from our amazing new Guardian Radio app. Download it free today in your App Store for your Apple device or Play Store for your Android device. The all-new and improved Guardian Radio app.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
So the doctor is in with me, Dr. Janothar Archer Cartwright, brought to you by Medical Concierge Services for all your medical healthcare needs. Check us out on our website, www.mcsfamilymedicine.com. So tonight we were talking about the sequence of success, which are the three simple principles of getting a high school education, getting a full-time job, and of course, not having children and marriage before the age of 21. Those three things determine that majority of people will not live in poverty by their 30s. We're going to go into the 10 keys for success once you have those building blocks. And even if you don't have all of them, you know, it's able to still move on from those points once you kind of understand what you want to do. And what I find is the most important thing is to have a plan. Always have a plan that allows you to create the steps to how to get there. But you have to have a vision and a plan for your life. So just before we go into that, just a few things from the actual study that looked at this, the Institute for Family Studies, and 97% of adults who followed the success sequence are not poor, 97%. The percent of adults aged 32 to 38 in poverty after completing each step. So if you missed all three steps, the chances of you being in poverty, 52%. That goes down to 27% if you graduate from high school. If you add onto that a full-time job, 10%. And if you're married first before you have children, that goes down to 3%. So the chances of you living in poverty, if you follow that full sequence, to not be in poverty is 97%. And so you can see that is quite substantial. And 94% of young adults from lower income families who followed the success sequence are not poor in that 32 to 38 group. So even if you come from abject poverty, if you fulfill that by the time you are an adult, basically, only 6% of you are in a lower income at all. So even if you are in abject poverty, and if you come from a middle class family, that goes down to about 1%. They say 15% of women are living in poverty and 12% of men. So there is some gender stuff related to all of that. But, you know, it's one of those things. So keys, some of the 10 most important keys to success. So once you've done that, and I promised to open the phone line. So let me do that. 322-623-2543-16, 325-4259. If you have a comment, a question, or you just want to jump in this conversation, what do you have to do to be successful? And what does that mean in the Bahamas? Are there extra obstacles inside of our way, or can these three simple things in this sequence be the thing to break cycles of poverty inside the country? So give me a call if you want to participate. However, to be successful, first of all, we have to define what is success in life. So most people consider having a really great career, you know, building wealth, respect from their peers, but also their personal kind of goals and what supports them having a really happy life, prioritizing relationships, physical health, safety, contributing to others, and creative zone to improve feelings of happiness. However, happiness is not always linked to success. You can be quite happy just kind of doing nothing, just watching TV or whatever like that. Some people are just happy with that, but is that success? Success in life means attaining your vision of a good life. It means achieving specific goals that result in the future you have planned for yourself. And so success in life is defined by the individual. And your version of success looks different maybe from someone else's, right? If you're looking for keys to success in business versus keys to success in relationship, your strategies and your efforts are usually going to be quite different. And, you know, life is always about balance. So you do want to have kind of this happiness, success in different areas in your life. And I like to think of it as financial, mental, spiritual, for myself. So those key areas are important to be balanced for me. It's also important that you take care that you don't let someone else really dictate what success is for you. But in life, we tend to have like this general idea of what success looks like, all right? So success does look different for different people. or what are the 10 keys to this broad idea of success? So one, I kind of alluded to this as we were going along in this conversation, but you have to make a plan. That's really the first key. And this is the very first and most important one, of course. And this means having a clear picture of what success looks like for you and putting it together and defining a set of goals that you would like to achieve in life. So I kind of do this every year where I kind of set out what I want to do, where I want to be by the end of the year and the next year. And, you know, sometimes we don't fulfill all of these things, but I find that making a plan helps it requires to get to that plan and to make these things happen. And to succeed means to actually accomplish these goals. And by definition, if you don't set goals, you never succeed. So if you're not working towards anything, there's nothing to work towards. Number two, being prepared for the unexpected. Many of people make really great plans, but if something goes wrong, a lot of people can't deal with not going in the direction that they thought they would go. So you have to be prepared. And this is where, in a financial sense, a lot of Bahamians tend to struggle because we don't really save. A lot of people don't save for a rainy day. And so you're not always prepared. So very important to be prepared. Put something away, no matter how small it is. You know, there's a thought of you can start if you're living paycheck to paycheck, percent, put that away until you can save 10%. And then when you're kind of there, you know, you want to do more. And what you find is when you start that little bit of savings and you see that you accumulate that money, you tend to want to save more. So you tend to even want to make more. Three, prioritizing those goals, creating your own system of habits, putting good habits into practice. You'll find that there may not be enough time in the day to get all of your goals accomplished. But if you manage your time wisely, that can be really, really helpful. And so management of your time, and this can be difficult because sometimes it seems like our time gets away from us. And so scheduling things, putting things together so that, you know, I'm going to do this at this particular time is very helpful. I myself, even though I do a lot of things, I do struggle with procrastination sometimes. And so I really have to give myself that, make it important that I know that I have to get certain things done by a certain time. And then prioritizing these goals. So I live a lot on lists. I always have multiple lists in my phone that I'm kind of working through these different lists. And so you don't let things really get ahead of yourself. You know, it's not always perfect, but if you try to do that, you tend to be able to kind of come back on track so you can go back to your list. Developing good habits. You can have big dreams, great goals, and still fail. The third key of success requires you to turn your goals into actions. Repeated actions in the right direction become really helpful habits. I tend to say it takes about 6 weeks to create a habit and 7 layers of, you know, kind of hearing and doing things over again to really instill it like inside of you, really learn something. You have to process it 7 different ways. And, you know, you have to do something repeatedly for at least 6 weeks. So once you form the right habits, you can create the type of momentum to get things done. And by creating systems for your life, you can form really good habits and stay on track. And you can build your systems by grouping good habits together. Having a system in place will help you to make really good decisions on the fly because you'll be used to thinking about these things. And it'll keep you on track on your goal-oriented tasks one by one. So key number 5 is learning from your mistakes. The road to success is sometimes paved with a bit of failure. And what we don't really realize is that failure really looks different to other people and to ourselves. And sometimes you may think that you're failing, but, you know, people out there think that you're doing really, really well. So sometimes you have to hardship or mistake that you may be going through. And, you know, it makes you down and makes you sad for a while, but you do have to pick yourself up. Success most likely came by the way of trying and failing in many different ways. And you can fail your way to success, but most never make the same mistakes over and over again. So learning from the things that you did, you know, you might have tried a business, it didn't work out. You go and you try again, you learn this time, you know, you don't hire family or you don't do certain things. These are important things that, you know, just help you to make it through in life. Keys to success. So that's key number five, right? Let's consider a runner. And every race, a runner loses, they may still be improving and they will likely see progress if they build up their strength and try new running techniques. So if you're a runner, you're not doing well, you're not winning, maybe you realize you have to improve your stamina, bone more muscle, those types of things. They may move up to fifth place, third place, second place. Even though they aren't first, each race is a part of the process of success in moving them closer and closer to their goals. It's just like some projects I would have done. And wow, first putting in to do certain projects, you're like, wow, I really didn't get very far in that. But every single time you go through that process, you learn a little bit more. Your projects and your presentation gets a little bit better. And you realize after a while that you've come a long way. And I try to be really good at processing problems and learning from my mistakes. So it might take me a minute to catch myself, but, you know, I try to do those things. Number six, try different strategies. You know, try and try again. So there are stops and starts, turns and detours, but, you know, nobody knows an exact path for success for you. And you just have to keep going and you have to keep going and going and going. And this is like persistence and perseverance is extremely important in the game of success because, you know, there are lots of times people will tell you no. There are lots of times that you go down a certain path and you realize you have to go back and just start over again. And so that's a really important part of success strategy is having to try different strategies over time. There's always more than one way to do something. So you can't be completely rigid in the things that you do. So if at first you don't succeed, try another way. Try a new strategy and come at your goals from a new angle and at different times, and maybe even with a different person. There could be, in fact, many effective strategies. You just need to. The one way to find it is to keep challenging and changing and keep trying until you find the one that works. So keep going. Seventh key is taking smart risks. So as you try out different strategies, you may find that you're trying something entirely new. It might feel scary. All things are really, really scary. I know when I started my clinic, you know, for years, I've been hoping to like partner, you know, something like that. And then, you know, things changed. I was working on a big project. I decided not to be a part of that and to do something myself. And I just felt within myself, it was the time to take that leap of trying to make my vision come to life. And I'm so happy that I took that chance to do that because to free myself from some limitations that I would have had if I just stuck with what I was doing, or even if I had taken what I thought was a really great opportunity at the time, but would have limited me in the space of being creative and innovative in the healthcare space. So that was a risky thing for me to do. I put up all my own money. You know, I created my own systems in terms of how to get things done. And, you know, I think it paid off in the long run in terms of having that peace of mind that I was successful in that endeavor, even though that was something that, you know, I did from scratch. And so you have to take some smart risks. You have to take on some tasks that may seem intimidating, but taking smart risks can have big payoffs. And taking smart and calculated risks mean researching potential outcomes and determining your chance. This pays off, it's going to be worthwhile. It's going to be totally worthwhile. And I find that we're not really big risk takers in the Bahamas. We really want to have that, you know, comfy job that really just, you know, pays. And that, I think that's a great way to start. We don't take much risks, but calculated risks. All right. So calculating risk is really like a life skill. And it does take a lot of time to develop. And so you may have a few failures along the way, but after a while you start to see what makes sense. And you want to start out by taking really small risks. And as you get better, you probably become more and more comfortable with making bigger and bigger jumps. But don't let that comfort be the only deciding factor. But risk is the only way that you're really going to achieve anything big. So if you want to move to another level, usually in your financial life and even in your romantic life, you do have to usually take a little bit of risk. Key number 8 is learning. We talked about there not being one particular path to success, but a lot can be learned by studying other people. So studying people that you want to be like, studying the people that have the successful picture that you are trying to emulate, and being a mentor when you have the opportunity, or you getting a mentor when you need to, and studying under someone for a specific amount of time. This is usually really, really helpful because this fills in a lot of the details and the nuances that you may need to take on the risks that you need. You can start doing this by doing research, by studying successful people who did something in the same realm that you are doing. And usually from there, you want to innovate from what you learn and study. So study the innovators, see what they do, see how they use their talents and their gifts, and then kind of put that in the context of your own, right? So if you want to be a great painter, you're going to study Van Gogh, Monet, Picasso. You want to own a restaurant, you want to learn from a restaurateur. So you may want to take a job in the restaurant business, and that might be a part of your long-term goal. Okay, caller, we have a few more minutes. You're on the air.
Good evening, Dr. Arch. How are you doing?
Hi, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm okay. I started to hear the initial part of the show, but of course, Dr. D, you know, the middle class is being harassed, right? And so, you know, I'm greatly affected. I'm waiting, you know, it's something supposed to happen. You know, my parents died and a transition is here. But, you know, and running a little small nano business, right, Dr. D? I just wanted to touch on the destruction of the middle class because, you know, post-pandemic, right? Most people don't have no idea what a post-pandemic world looks like for some people. Mm-hmm. And so they say being successful is when you're able to make somebody else successful, right? We'd call it a gurukul type of education, or basically, it's similar to an apprenticeship system, but the difference is you actually live with the person you're learning from. You know what I mean? That's what a gurukul system is. But I looking at the side effects of the pandemic. Some people I know of a few who would have situated. You know, I have a young son, so what happened is I was unwilling to put him in a nursery at a young age, right? You don't understand what I say, Dr. D.
I have similar feelings.
And so my fiance, she, like I tell you, she works for an American company. And of course, you know, they fired her for not taking the vaccine in an inconspicuous way. You know, they use some euphemistic words. So I'm flying on one wing from then, okay? Doing everything, right. National insurance, life insurance, cable, light, water, children, everything. Me, one, I wasn't complaining. I just said to these people, I've lost contracts from hotels because people who used to do business with me, they have left. And so that means you need to this is what I'm showing you, the repercussions of a little nano business there. You know, I do work for people. They left, so I'm not able to do it. I'm still doing work. I'm surviving, right? But
yeah.
I was thinking about a wholesale paradigm, looking up at someone in the States that my mother dealt with. But I'm just trying to show you how rough it is on some people. Like I say, I was flying on one wing for a little while now. And, you know, I'm not complaining, but I have to do what I have to do, Dr. D. Now, when my son reaches a certain age, I guess she could go back on the job market. But right now, it'll be mind-boggling for me, right? At 58, you listening? To try and deal with a son and be doing upholstery. And upholstery is one of the hardest jobs in the world. A professional upholsterer, not a normal upholsterer, like who will just take your money and do anything. You understand what I'm saying, Dr. D? Most people don't realize, but we like to demean what other people just do. But upholstery is just one trade that I have learned. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so I've learned how to be frugal. I've learned how to reuse things, and I've learned how to just recycle things instead of just buying everything. You could always, like, before you discard something, even if it's schools, whatever it is, Dr. D, you have to find a way to be more economical, even in a little nano business, you know. You understand? Because it's only you and God.
I know. I'm a small business owner, so I know what it is to...
I'm a nano, so you're like trying to be... Yeah, you understand what I'm saying? But I like to thank you for bringing up this topic, but Dr. D, as it relates to the post-pandemic world, right? You know, I just wanted you to know that this particular paradigm that they're creating with the middle class, it was by design, you know, and most people, they can't see it. I just wanted to get a joke in there, too. You saw, how come you didn't tell your brethren that there's a case that the people in Minnesota, the legislators in Minnesota trying to pass a law making it illegal for people with vaccinated blood to give blood donations?
I think I saw something about that. I like to wait until things are really, like, kind of concrete before I comment on stuff like that.
Yeah, but it doesn't, you know,
like
even that, need to wait, because, you know, I'm full of hate, right? This is, I mean, that's only making a joke, but I'm full of hate towards the status quo euphemistic narratives. You see what I'm saying, Dr. D?
For sure.
And when I was making the joke that humanity this morning, I tell him all of us are suffering from crimes, and then I went on to say we're suffering from crimes against humanity, but they think I'm in some form of insanity. But that's all right, Dr. D. Bless up. Give thanks.
All right, thanks so much. Yeah, it's difficult out there, and I don't know if Bahamians are watching what's going on internationally with, you know, the BRICS. It really, you know, it sounds like a really great thing for America not to be the number one superpower, but our dollar is quite linked to them. So, you know, we do have to watch out what's going on in the global economy as well and how that will affect us in the future. So, I like the caller. It's, you know, you have to be a little frugal. You have to make sure to put some money away. And we're just about done. So I'm just going to go quickly before we leave. The ninth key is to master how to say no. And that's something that I had to kind of do, because as a doctor, we tend to have to say a lot of yes. You're always helping people. But sometimes, you know, you have to say no when it's right, when you know it's something that's written for you or it's going to cause you some heartache or pain. Because the world is quite difficult these days. And then number 10, as the caller alluded to, you know, having invest in those relationships, because those are what bring a lot of things your way. And the loss of his connections resulted in some difficulty in business. So you want to keep close to the people you love, of course, and you want to have relationships out there in the community, in the wider community, and invest in those relationships with quality and valuable time. And many types of relationships can boost your chances of success in life. So what makes a person's life successful? A multitude of these different keys. However, more of these you have, the better you will do. So I would start with the simple sequence of success, you know, especially for young people or people who are in poverty. Graduate from high school, get yourself a good paying, stable job, and to have your children later, after the age of 21, once your marriage is a success. And we'll have a more successful Bahamas. So I want to thank everybody for listening in tonight with me, Dr. D, on The Doctor Is In, brought to you by Medical Concierge Services. We'll see you next week, Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. for all things health, wellness, and things that pertain to the Bahamian society. Good night, Bahamas. Bye.